The left is coming for the First Amendment. So they claim that they're all for freedoms of speech and association and religion, and that's crap, because the left believes equality of feelings trumps constitutional liberty. They think their agenda justifies getting rid of free speech and crushing freedom of association and punishing freedom of religion. So here are three of the latest indicators that the left wants to destroy the First Amendment wholesale. So number one, stopping citizens from being politically involved. On Sunday, noted political commentator, all-around overrated actor, terrible Batman George Clooney, appeared on Meet the Press to discuss a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton. At that fundraiser, he charged $353,000 to be an event co-chair, which just sounds like that's totally worth the money. He blasted the Citizens United decision, which unleashed the power of the First Amendment for those who wish to give money to political causes. He said, quote, "I think Citizens United is the worst, one of the worst laws passed since I have been around. And so our job is to try and counter that in some way." First of all, George, Citizens United is not a law. It's a court decision. But then Clooney added that the Bernie Sanders campaign, when they talk about it, is absolutely right. It's ridiculous we should have this money in politics. I agree completely, he said after finishing a dinner where he charged people $400,000 to be the co-sponsors of the dinner. Overturning Citizens United, by the way, involves repealing the First Amendment because it turns out that you have a right to spend money on elections, and so does everybody else. Okay, number two, prosecuting people for giving to causes. So on March 29th, with Al Gore looking on, more than a dozen state attorneys general, almost all Democrats, stated that they would look to prosecute the oil company Exxon for the crime of giving money to the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which is an anti-anthropogenic global warming think tank. No man-made global warming. What was their crime? Why are they being prosecuted? Supposedly, Exxon committed fraud because they supported a non-approved opinion about global warming. They sent money to the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and this is fraud. National Review's editorial board said, quote, "What's at stake here is nothing less than the rule of law and the maintenance of a free society, one in which people, think tanks, and businesses are not subject to prosecution for political activism on contentious public policy questions. This is an attack not only on the First Amendment, but on the entirety of the political process itself." The left doesn't care. They love the idea of prosecuting political opponents, and this is only the beginning. Okay, third way that the left is destroying the First Amendment. Now they want to destroy people for failing to comply with the latest leftist social agenda item. North Carolina continues to stand strong against private actors who despise that its determination that men should not pee next to little girls. But now government actors are getting involved too. They say that religious citizens must be forced to cater same-sex weddings. They say private businesses must allow grown men to urinate next to small female children. And they say anybody who believes differently must be curbed. And then their friends in Hollywood produce propaganda videos suggesting that people who don't want their liberties violated are the real kooks. It's going to be an ugly period for the First Amendment, folks. Then again, the left really hates the First, Second, Fourth, Fifth, Ninth, Tenth Amendments particularly. So I guess the First Amendment can just kind of get in line. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.
Tend to demonize people who don't care about your feelings.
It's a Monday, and I'm depressed, and so are you. Everybody's depressed. Everybody's depressed. But there's one reason not to be depressed, and that's our good friends at Hillsdale College. Now, Hillsdale College is not only a great school, but they have these programs. You can go there, and you can learn about important constitutional issues like the presidency. So if you watch Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton or any of the other candidates, basically, they all seem to believe that the presidency of the United States is judicial power and executive power and legislative power all together, and they're just the president can do anything. There's a new course called Presidency and the Constitution from Hillsdale College. You can learn what the presidency was actually supposed to do, and that's hillsdale.edu/ben, hillsdale.edu/ben. So you can go and check that out, and it's a great course. I highly recommend it. Okay, so lots to get to today. Lots of reasons to be depressed, which makes me happy because, as we all know, I'm the depressing show, right? Klavan is the one where you go if you want to feel better about life, and I'm the place to remind you that we all die and life is meaningless. So here's the latest alert in the we all die and life is meaningless sweepstakes. Donald Trump is about to enter a very, very good period for him in terms of these primaries. The New York primary is tomorrow. Trump is going to sweep by all the available polls. He'll do really well. And then we'll get the renewed Trump momentum conversation going, and it'll turn into Trump versus the world. And this is the conversation that Trump wants to have, right? What Trump is doing now is he's deploying two basic arguments. One is, you're all cheating me. And the other is, if you cheat me, I'm going to burn crap down. I mean, I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to burn crap down. And his followers are willing to go along with this. They're fine with the thug behavior from Donald Trump, the thug talk from Donald Trump. And there are a couple reasons why that is, and I'll get to those in a second. Why so many people on the right, are happy with this kind of thug tyranny that Donald Trump purports to push. And by the way, it doesn't make him a Democrat, a small-D Democrat, when he says all of these contests are rigged, I am the people. I am the people is a tyrant line, right? If he wants to say the people's voices aren't being heard and I think they should change all of the contests so that they are perfectly proportional, that's one thing. For him to protest against the system that was in place for a year beforehand, and he's bad at the system, for him to complain about that now is a little bit disingenuous. But that's what Trump is saying. Anyway, here he says, the system is 100% crooked. Not 90% crooked, 100% crooked.
But I will say this. It's a rigged system. It's a crooked system. It's 100% crooked. Absolutely. The bosses, is that a correct? And these people know it better.
Absolutely.
It's a crooked. They're not here for this reason, to be honest. But this is, you know, they understand law enforcement better than anybody else. It's a corrupt and crooked system.
It's a corrupt and crooked system. It's always this hand motion. It's the ring, middle finger to the thumb, folks. If you can't see this on TV, middle finger to the thumb, and then first finger to the thumb, and the other fingers rise. That's the Trump motion. If you're working on your Donald Trump impersonation, the system is 100% crooked. And not only is the system crooked, you know, the system that he knew about for a year. Not only is the system crooked, the RNC had better revise this system or they're going to face a rough July. You know that store you got? That store that's a really nice store? You know, it's very nice in here. I got to tell you, it's a very nice store you got here. Well, I'd be very sorry if something should happen to your store. I'd be very, very sorry if you were to come here one day. And let me tell you, frankly, I'd be very sorry if one day you were to come in here and the store would burn to the ground. Wouldn't be me. I can't say. But frankly, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised, Donald Trump.
The system is a bad system, and they got to do something about it. The Republican National Committee, they better get going, because I'll tell you what, you're going to have a rough July at that convention. You better get going, and you better straighten out the system, because the people want their vote. The people want to vote, and they want to be represented properly.
The people want their vote, and it'll be a rough if the RNC should burst into flame, if explosions should happen everywhere, if people should be getting clubbed. I don't know. Frankly, what? You know, it would happen. I can't say it's good. I can't say it's bad. It's a thing. It's a thing. And then Donald Trump finally concludes his triumvirate of stupidity by suggesting that, yeah, the system is rigged, but don't worry. Nobody has better toys than I do. I don't know if he includes all of his former wives in this category or just material objects, but here he is.
Look, nobody has better toys than I do. I can put them in the best planes and bring them to the best resorts anywhere in the world. Doral, Mar-a-Lago. I can put them in the best places in the world. California, I have something that blows everything away. But it's a corrupt system. You're basically buying these people. You're basically saying, delegate, listen, we're going to send you to Mar-a-Lago on a Boeing 757. You're going to use the spa. You're going to this, you're going to that. We want your vote. That's a corrupt system.
Okay, so that's a corrupt system. So Donald Trump, really, he objects to corruption, Donald Trump. This is a guy who cares deeply about corruption. And really, he's upset when people try to buy other people. By the way, not one shred of evidence, not one. He can't name a drink that a Cruz delegate has been bought. He can't name a plane ticket that has been bought for a Cruz delegate. He can't name any of these things. His campaign can't. Right? Maybe it's happening, but he hasn't named any evidence of it. He's just throwing that out there, like Cruz is going around buying delegates. But if I really wanted to, I could buy everybody, but I'm not going to buy everybody because I, Donald J. Trump, I am a principled man. I would never buy anyone. Well, let's flashback just a couple of months. Here he is talking about why he gave so much money to Democrats.
Are you worried at all that somebody who has given money to Hillary, she was at your wedding?
No, I give money to everybody.
But that Republican voters in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina might be concerned about that?
No, in fact, a lot of people like it. You know, we have gridlock in Washington. For instance, I've helped Nancy Pelosi. I've helped Reid. I'm a business.
Right. You gave money to Reid and Pelosi to help recapture Congress in 2006.
I'm a business. You know, I was in business. I built a great company. They always treated me nicely. We need that in Washington. We have total gridlock.
So you will argue to voters Yes, I gave money to Reid and Pelosi to help recapture Congress, but this is what we need, more bipartisan
spirit. I'm a conservative Republican. I'm a very conservative person, actually. But I get along with everybody.
Oh, okay. So here it is. He gets along with everybody. He gives money to Democrats. What we need is more bribery. What we need is more bribery. He runs a business. Come on. He has a business. But when it comes to this business, this is where he draws the line, folks. In the presidential race, this is where suddenly Donald Trump becomes a crusader against corruption and bribery. Is right here. This is the line. Or maybe he just sucks at what he's doing. And so he's looking for an excuse. And so he's going to hide behind the, oh, people get bought, but I would never buy anyone. Me? Donald Trump? I would never buy anyone. Okay, this is the Trump game. Okay, the Trump game is if he's losing, he whines. When he whines, he lies. And then he threatens, right? This is the Trump game. This is how he plays it. And no matter what the situation, it's always the same game. He's always the victim, but he's always the bully at the same time. So he's a victim bully, right? I'm a victim of the system, but I promise you, if I continue to be the victim of the system, I will burn down your convention. I'll come to your convention hall. It won't be me. It'll be people who follow me. I can't stop them. It's a free country. He did it there. And in microcosm, that's what happened with the Michelle Fields story. So again, for people who have been under a rock for the last 6 weeks, Donald Trump's campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, grabbed, yanked, and bruised a reporter named Michelle Fields. Michelle Fields talked about it. Donald Trump's people first said that she was crazy and that she'd made it up and that they never met her. Lewandowski claimed that he'd never touched her, he'd never seen her. Then the story changed to, well, maybe she was grabbed, but it wasn't a big deal. The bruises kind of, they must have appeared. No big deal. Why is this a big deal? Then it turned into Corey Lewandowski wasn't just stopping this from, wasn't just grabbing her, he was doing it because she was a threat to Donald Trump. So he was actually an intrepid hero. He was a Normandy-style intrepid hero, and he had to jump in. In fact, if Corey Lewandowski had jumped in and strangled Michelle Fields to death, he would have been fully justified in order to prevent her from using, as Donald Trump called it, her little pen bomb to harm the dear leader. Right? And they fib about the whole thing where they say that he's shying away from her when he's clearly reaching into his pocket to take out a pen. Okay, so they just tell all of these lies, and they lie and they lie, but the people who back them are happy to back them all the way, all the way. And we'll talk about why again in a second, because this is the pattern, right? You lose, and then you whine, or you do something wrong, and then you whine, and then you suggest that you are being lied about, and then you threaten. And that's the way this works. So here's Michelle Fields talking about how this would have been a very easy case, except that they lied about me, and then they wouldn't apologize to me, and this could have gone away very easily. Here she was on CNN yesterday.
Michelle, I want to ask you about Mika Brzezinski's comment, the idea this was a joke. Was this a joke to you?
Well, I do think that this shouldn't have been such a huge story. If I had just received an apology, as I was told I was going to receive, which is why I was quiet the first 2 days, this wouldn't have been a huge story. The reason why it's such a huge story is because Corey lied. Donald Trump lied. They defamed me. And they went on this huge smear campaign against me. And I think it sheds light on the character of the campaign. And I think a lot of people were surprised by their blatant lies about me. That's why it became a huge story. It's the defamation, not so much the arm, the grabbing of the arm.
And that's exactly right. But so what do? They respond with more lies, right? So here's Donald Trump talking about Fields. He says, oh, she lied. She lied. She's the one who lied. Not my campaign manager who said he never saw her and never grabbed her. Not me who said she made it up and she was delusional, right? No. It was her. She's the liar, right? It's the gaslighting. And again, it's not that the rules of the convention are set and Donald Trump just lost. It's not that he's losing these delegates in a process that he knew about. It's that he's being cheated. He's always the victim, right? So Donald Trump is the victim of Michelle Fields, right? Donald Trump wishes he'd been victimized by Michelle Fields. Here's Donald Trump talking about it.
What's the role now of your previous existing staffers, still like Mr. Very Lewandowski? Good.
Corey's right here.
What's his role?
Did a good job. Totally exonerated from that bogus nonsense from somebody that made a bogus claim, who, by the way, if you look at the tape, it bore no relationship to what she said happened. And I tell you, I really have a lot of respect for the people in Florida for looking at that fairly. I really do. I have great respect for the prosecutor and for the police for taking a look at that clip and realizing that she misrepresented. I have great respect for that.
Okay, let's stop it there. That's an outright lie. If you read the prosecutor's report, he didn't say that Fields misrepresented. He said, in fact, that there is no reasonable doubt, none, that he grabbed her arm against her will, which is the element of battery. Okay, the only thing the prosecutor said, the only rationale for why he didn't pursue it, is because he said that Lewandowski had a plausible case, meaning a reasonable doubt case, that he could have been there to clear a bubble around Trump or some such nonsense. Of course, none of this has anything to do with the fact that Trump virtually owns Jupiter. That the prosecutor's wife, who is a PR specialist, the first picture on her website is a picture of her with Melania Trump. Right? Couldn't have anything to do with these things. But in any case, he's lying when he says, oh, well, the tape exonerates Corey. The tape doesn't exonerate Corey Lewandowski. The tape shows exactly what Lewandowski was saying was a lie. And then Lewandowski's asked about it, and Lewandowski says, I won't apologize, right? This is their routine. I won't apologize. The stronger they appear, and I'll explain it in a second, the stronger they appear, the harsher they appear, the more they lie, the more their people love them. Because now they've been drafted into this alternative world, this magical world. Why do people want to be part of that world? I'll tell you why. After we do a commercial, but here's Lewandowski, before we do that, saying he won't apologize to Fields under any circumstances, basically.
In the interest of avoiding unnecessary litigation, which I know Republicans don't like, are you prepared here and now to apologize to Ms. Fields for touching her and for saying that she was delusional?
Well, you know, here and now what I'd like to say is, again, I've never spoken to Ms. Fields. And so, you know, I've turned over my phone record to the Palm Beach County District Attorney's Office. It clearly shows I called her phone number that evening when I got back and read about this on the Twitter feed. I'd be happy to have a conversation with her. But to apologize to someone I've never spoken to and candidly don't ever remember having any interaction with, I think is something that is a little unrealistic right now. But I have said and be happy to say again, it's a person I've never spoken to, but I'd be happy to have that conversation if we can put this thing behind us.
Really? Really, he'd be happy to have that conversation? He supposedly told the prosecutors, they said this, that he was going to write an apology letter, and then he didn't do it, right? And by the way, I love this. So now his news story is, I grabbed her, but, and then, or I may not have grabbed her, I don't know, I don't remember, but I called her that night, right? I called her that night, and but I still didn't know her, right? He literally, the day after this happened, after he supposedly called her at night, he tweeted her, I don't know you, you're making this up, you're delusional. And so he says that the records show that he called her phone number. Because when I call to apologize or talk to somebody, the way that I typically do it, my wife knows this, anytime my wife and I have a fight, what I do is I get a random phone number she doesn't know, and then I call her phone number so she can't recognize the phone number, and then I make sure to not leave a message. And then if she ever asks me, did you apologize, I say, absolutely, look at the phone records. Right? The phone records show I called you. It doesn't matter if I never left a message, doesn't matter if we never spoke. What? Unbelievable nonsense. And for people to believe this stuff is the part that's truly shocking. But I'm going to explain why they believe it in just 1 second. Okay, so first, Reagan.com. If you are concerned about your privacy, if you're concerned that the government, corporations are mining your email for data that they can use to market to you, they're mining for data that they can use for whatever government purpose, nefarious or otherwise, that they want to use it for, you need to go to ReaganPrivacy.com. There you can get an email address, yourname@Reagan.com, which does two things. One, guards your privacy. They don't turn over any information from your email to either marketing companies or to the government. That's number one. Number two, you do have an email that ends with Reagan.com, which is pretty cool because, let's face it, Reagan was a good president, and you want to be associated with that. I mean, there's a reason why I'm not encouraging you to go to Bush.com or Obama.com, right? I mean, let's stick with presidents who are good. And Coolidge.com apparently wasn't available. So Reagan.com, it is. ReaganPrivacy.com is the place you want to be to guard your privacy. Okay, so why do so many of these people buy into this? And it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating. It feels like you're knocking your head against the wall because it's clear Trump is lying. It's clear he's lying. It's clear his campaign manager is lying. It's clear that they lie routinely over and over and over again. Lewandowski and Trump changed their story on the Fields thing 9 times. 9. Okay, the fact that what happened, I don't even think it's that big a deal either, but I think that the fact that they lie about it and smear people is a big deal. And now they're doing it writ large, right? The RNC is bad. The RNC is trying to rob us. The RNC is trying to steal it from us. And if we don't get our way, we're going to burn down the house. By the way, very lefty tactic. Very lefty tactic. The left has been doing this since the 60s. When there were race riots in a lot of major cities, they've been saying, you don't give us our way. You don't give us our welfare dollars. You don't give us our Department of Justice, we are going to have riots in cities and we're going to burn things down, right? They're doing it now in Ferguson and Baltimore. That's Trump. Trump's just doing it from the other side. He's just doing it not for ethnic minorities. He's doing it for his own Trump base. So the RNC is fighting back against this and they're saying, listen, you got to stop threatening people. Here's Reince Priebus, who, as I say every time now, Reince Priebus looking more and more like Lando Calrissian every day with not black, but otherwise, like Lando Calrissian from Empire Strikes Back, saying this deal gets worse all the time about Donald Trump. Here he is.
How concerned are you when Donald Trump says the RNC better be prepared for a rough July? And are you concerned about reports of threats being made to delegates? What do you say to any campaign doing that?
Well, sure. I mean, look, there's no room for threatening the delegates or the convention or anybody that would be going to our national convention. But I also think some of this is rhetoric and hyperbole. And the truth is that the delegates themselves are the ones that write the rules for the convention. The RNC doesn't write any rules. The RNC has basically an administrative role at the convention. It's by majority rule. The delegates can run the convention. So it's on them to decide what they want to do about a lot of these issues, not us.
Okay, so it's on them, but Trump should stop threatening. You have no control, and Reince knows he has no control, and he looks like a deer in the headlights here. Ted Cruz, meanwhile, he's saying, and he's playing right into Trump's game by doing this, he's saying, the way I win the nomination is we get to the first ballot, Trump loses on the first ballot, and then he starts losing votes more and more and more. By the way, I do think this is still the most likely outcome on a percentage basis. Trump does not make his 1,237. The problem is, by Cruz saying openly that this is what he's shooting for, and he has to, because obviously it's the truth. Unlike Trump, Cruz actually tells the truth a lot of the time. Cruz says, here's how I win the nomination. It plays right into Trump's narrative. So here's Cruz.
If Donald is the nominee, Hillary Clinton wins, and she wins by double digits. And I don't believe Donald is going to be the nominee. As I said, five states in a row, we've won landslides over and over and over again. The stakes are too high for us to hand the election to Hillary Clinton, which is what nominating Donald Trump does.
But you can't overtake him before June.
In all likelihood, we're going to go into a contested convention, which means nobody has a majority. And I'll have a ton of delegates, he'll have a ton of delegates. And it's going to be a battle in Cleveland to see who can get to a majority. You can't get the nomination without earning a majority of the delegates elected by the people. And I believe Donald's highest total will be on that first ballot, and he will go steadily down because Donald cannot win, and we don't want to nominate someone who's a loser in November.
Okay, and he's right, but it all plays into this Trump narrative that he's being screwed and he has the most votes going in. And let's face it, people love a thug. Matthew Dowd, who knows better than this, he's on ABC News, and he's supposedly a Republican strategist. He says, yeah, the system's rigged. You know, he's totally right. Trump is totally right. The system's rigged.
They're right. The system is rigged. I mean, it was designed to be rigged. It's been designed to be rigged, and it's rigged on both sides of the aisle in the course of this. How the system is set up, it's not set up that is transparent, open, and to get all the voters involved in the course of this. So they're right about that. The RNC is also right. And when they say the rules are there, they should have been known, you can plan around them, both are right in that. But it is a rigged system. I was looking last night at the data that the voters, the people that voted in the Republican primary in D.C., every delegate, one delegate was chosen for every 100 people. The voters that voted in Michigan, one delegate was chosen for every 20,000 people. And when you cancel primaries in Colorado and say, we're not going to do a primary now, we're going to do an entirely different system, they're right. The system is broken. The political system on both sides is broken. And it is a rigged system that it only benefits certain people.
Okay, it's rigged. It only benefits certain people. And finally, you have Mika Brzezinski, just to sum up this part of the show. You have Mika Brzezinski on MSNBC. She and Joe Scarborough are totally in Trump's camp at this point. And the number of media who have just fallen for Trump is truly amazing. By the way, Mika and Joe will switch over to Hillary as soon as the primaries are over. But Mika says, no, Trump is, he's just what we've been waiting for. He wrote an op-ed last Friday in the Wall Street Journal, which, again, this all demonstrates that The Rupert Murdoch empire has now swung totally behind Trump. Wall Street Journal runs an op-ed from Trump on the same day that the New York Post, owned by Murdoch, runs an editorial picking Trump for president in New York, which is insane. On the same day that Fox News is pushing its hosts to, you know, continue being pro-Trump, which is what they do. Here's Mika Brzezinski talking about how Trump really, this is what we've all been waiting for, is Trump's shift to the center.
I see a very smart
when it's happening,
op-ed. I still don't see the pivot will come when he says takes back some of the Muslim statements and some of the other divisive things. That's the pivot. This is smart campaigning.
It's smart campaigning, and she says this is exactly what we've been waiting for from Donald Trump. So why are people in love with this strategy? Why are people in love with the victim shtick from Trump? I'm being victimized. And then the lying about how he's been victimized. And then finally the I'll burn crap down if I don't get what I want, right? Why are people in love with this? The answer, I think, goes to something that's deeper than just Trump. The answer goes to the fact that people really don't want to be free. I really don't think people want to be free. You know, George W. Bush said, with regard to the war in Iraq and in the Middle East, he said, there's an urge in every human heart for freedom. This is what every human heart desires, is freedom. I don't think this is true. I think that the every human heart desires security. It's a battling impulse. We all want freedom to do what we want, but then we want the government to protect us doing what we want. And we want the government providing for us because we're lazy and because people want a protector. Now, this goes all the way back to biblical times. I mean, you remember all the way back in your Bible class, you remember Samuel is approached by the people. He's the judge at the time. And there's been this kind of ad hoc system of judges who've been ruling Israel. And Samuel is approached by the people and they say, we want a king. And he says, well, God ain't big into that. And they say, well, we want a king anyway. So, well, let me just tell you, if you have a king, he's going to take your sons and daughters, he's going to take your sons for wars, he's going to use your daughters for whatever he uses your daughters for, he's going to take all your money, he's going to take all your cash, he's going to take all your crops. King's not going to be good. They say, no, well, we want a king anyway. We want a king anyway. He says, all right. He goes back to God, and God says, don't worry, Samuel, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. Right? Okay, that is what happens in virtually any democratic society. At a certain point, people say, we reject the notion of the individual human being as mattering because we all want security. We want a dear leader. We want a dear leader. Trump is a dear leader. That's all he is. And the way that dear leaders take power is they play off of victimization, the idea that they've been victimized by the system, and then they say, we are now going to strike back and we're going to thug at all the people who have victimized us. You cross us and we will break you. And all the frustrated people go, yeah! Because somebody needs to break these people. Somebody needs to break this corrupt system. So what Trump does, what all successful movements do, is they take a grain of truth and then they wrap it in a husk of lies. They take a core of truth and they wrap it in a husk of lies. That's what Trump does. So the core of truth in Trump is twofold. One, the RNC is corrupt. And two, the journalistic establishment is corrupt. Right? These are the two grains of truth. I don't like the RNC any more than Trump does. I think the RNC has been a crap show for a long time. There are a lot of people like me who are very frustrated that, for example, John McCain in 2008 wins the nomination with 47% of the popular vote. And he wins it walking away. He doesn't have a majority. He has 47%. Mitt Romney wins 52% of the popular vote in 2012. But by the time we had hit the end, it was basically him versus Santorum. A lot of the other candidates had fallen by the wayside. You know, Perry had been ousted. And so it ends up being Romney, but a lot of people feel frustrated and screwed by the system. They feel like they've been jacked by the system. Here comes Trump. And Trump says, the RNC is corrupt. And we all go, well, okay. He wasn't saying it before. He wasn't saying it about McCain or Romney. But now he's saying it about him, right? But he's using the argument that the system is corrupt to say, and they're specifically gearing it against me. And he said this. He said this about Colorado, right? He said, Colorado, they built the system knowing I was going to win, and then they built it just to stop me. That's a lie. That's not true. It's verifiably untrue. But people who hate the system, they go, okay, the system's corrupt. Maybe he's right. And then about the journalistic establishment. The journalistic establishment, we all know the media lie. We all know that they lie on a regular basis. They take the left side. They push false narratives. This is what they do. But even the journalistic establishment is right twice a day. They're a broken clock, and they're right twice a day. The problem is Trump says they're wrong all the time. So if I say something as Donald Trump, and it's a lie, it's verifiable, it's not true, but the media says, wait a second, it's not true what you're saying, Trump just says, yeah, but those people lie. Yeah, but those people lie. And if you say, well, you knew the rules of the RNC, yeah, well, those people are corrupt. Those people are corrupt. Right? Ted Cruz, maybe he's honest, but, you know, people like Ted Cruz in the establishment who manipulate and behind the system, those people are corrupt, lying Ted. And his people go, oh, well, he's hitting the right people. Here's the part where I go back to people want a dictator. When a system is corrupt, and it is, when a system is corrupt, and it's been corrupt for a very long time, and it's been infiltrated by insiders who have a certain interest in the system, when that's been the case, and by the way, you can't say insiders are giving it to Ted Cruz, who is the least insidery candidate in American politics in my lifetime, far less insidery than Trump, who, as we showed earlier in the show, is willing to pay off the left. When you have a system that's corrupt, people's natural tendency is not to say, let's dismantle the system. It's not, unfortunately. Their tendency is to say, let's put in a guy who is above the rules. So you have a set of rules. The institution then breaks the rules. People don't say, okay, let's dismantle the institution. Right? Let's rewrite the institution from the set. Less trust. No institution. Let's push down the institution. Instead, what they do is they tend to say, well, if we got our guy in there, if we got our guy in there to really clean it up, it would be better. And in order to get him in, the rules no longer apply. right? Rules don't apply to him. We need somebody above the rules. We need the Ubermensch. We need somebody to come in. Rules don't apply to him because if we play by the corrupt rules, the bad guy wins. So we need somebody to not play by those rules. He has to be even more corrupt than the most corrupt people, and he will bring us victory. And if the media are lying, we need someone who lies even more than the media. Not less, more, because we know the media are lying. So you can simultaneously hold these two concepts in mind if you're a Trump supporter. You can, the left lies, and Trump lies, but Trump is lying because he wants to defeat the left, and so you can trust him. Right? Because Trump can be trusted, and the media never can, even though the media are sometimes right. The media are sometimes right. Not always, not even a lot of the time. But a couple of times a day, that broken clock is right. We've taken it to mean the broken clock is never right, ever. It's always wrong. And so if it's always wrong, then even if, no matter what they say, it's wrong, even if they're telling the truth about Trump. The RNC, same deal. They're corrupt. We need an Ubermensch to come in and just break things. The rules are bad. No more rules. They don't apply to this guy. The rules simply don't apply. And it doesn't matter if he agreed to the rules already, because the system of the rules is corrupt. This is actually a leftist perspective. This is a leftist perspective. The reason this is a leftist perspective is because what the left says is that all human activity is created by a system. All bad human activity is created by a system. It's created by a system of economics called capitalism. This is what Bernie Sanders says, right? He says that the financial crash happened because of greed. Human greed, people who are evil. Greedy, evil humans. But those greedy, evil humans only exist because of a system. That system of capitalism. So what do we need? We need a man who's bigger than capitalism to come in and not abide by rules of greed and not greed. We need that man to be above the rules because he needs to break down the system. We need someone to come in and grab all of our money and redistribute it and do what he will. We need a God king to come in and be bigger than the rules, above morality. We need him to come in and we need to fix things. And the way you fix things, the way you destroy the institution, is by continuing to maintain it, just putting somebody who's even more corrupt in power, somebody who has no rules that apply to him at all. This is how you end up at dictator land. This is how you end up with dear leader, right? Trump, for a lot of people, is this dear leader. The more he lies, the more powerful they think he is because it shows he doesn't abide by the rules. The more he lies, if he stops lying, it's bad for him. The more he lies, the more they think he is powerful because every lie he tells and gets away with is a rebuttal to the media. Every lie he tells about the RNC and gets away with is a rebuttal to the corrupt RNC. Doesn't matter if he's lying. Doesn't matter if he's corrupt. He's the man we need because he breaks all the rules, because he won't play within the system, because he operates outside the system, because he's coming in like a white knight on a black steed. He's coming in and he's going to change the system completely, and the rules don't apply to him, and so he must be given leeway. And the more he lies, the more he whines, the more he threatens, the better he is. The less number of rules that apply to him, that's how we know he's a great man. The only way we can tell that Donald Trump is a great man is because the rules don't apply to him. If he were to play by the rules, we would know that he's not a great man, right? Then he's just part of the system. If he's like Ted Cruz, he plays by the rules that he's given. Now he's just part of the system, just a product of the system. But Trump is outside the system. He's the bug in the machine. And if you, like Independence Day, if you want to destroy the machine, you have to plant this virus and it's just going to destroy all the machinery. That's who Trump is. And he can't play by the rules. So the less he plays by the rules, the more his if his campaign manager had slugged Michelle Fields, really, like punched her, and then he'd come out and said it never happened, and then it would come out that it did happen, and he told the exact same story, Trump supporters would be right there with him the whole way, because it doesn't matter what story you tell about Trump. He violates rules. This makes him good. This makes him powerful, because power equals good in a system where currently powerful equals corrupt. So That's the worship for Trump. And it's very scary stuff, because once you get into this territory where you're looking for a guy just to break the rules because it shows how powerful he is, that he can break the rules and get away with them, you're not going to like it when the rules don't exist anymore. The rules have been perverted. The solution is to fix them. But the solution is not to bring in the guy who doesn't believe there are rules. Once you do that, you're going to be real surprised when it turns out the rules are gone and he turns around and it's just pure naked power. And that's all that's there. Just pure naked power. And a guy who makes the rules by the seat of his pants, a guy who makes the rules by his narcissism and his ego, that's where this is going. That's where this is going. Now, the left has been comfortable with this for a very long time. This is why all of the leftists are really dictatorial in nature. And they don't abide by the rules, and they don't care about the rules. But it's clear they don't care about the rules. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, we'll show you, Trump and Hillary are basically the same. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is the Jar Jar Binks, the head of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. She says, she was asked specifically by Hugh Hewitt of Salem, she was asked, okay, so, you know, Corey Lewandowski wasn't indicted. If he had been indicted, there were a lot of people who said he should have been fired. If Hillary has an aide who's indicted in this whole email thing, should that aide be fired? Now, this would be what we call playing by the rules, right? If you have an aide who's indicted, that person probably should not have lots of power, at least until that person is cleared. Watch Debbie Wasserman Schultz's answer. Mrs. Debbie Wasserman! Okay, let's go.
Many Democrats and many Republicans said of Donald Trump's campaign manager that he should be fired, and he wasn't. If any of Secretary Clinton's aides are indicted in the FBI server investigation, should they also be fired? Should the same standard apply?
That is a question that I'm not even going near. I don't think that's going to happen. And at the end of the day, we are going to have a campaign that will play out. Our nominee will ultimately be elected president of the United States because we are on the side of the American people and ultimately our candidate.
It's not about whether or not it's going to happen. It's about the standard. If a senior aide is ever indicted in a campaign, as Mr. Lewandowski was, should they be fired immediately?
Again, I don't think that that's going to happen, so it's not a question that is one that I think makes sense to answer. I'm focused on making sure that when we get to the end of our primary, we're preparing for the general election, and we can and will elect our nominee, the 45th president of the United States.
So the Democrats believe the same thing that Trump believes, right? Hillary is above the law. The law doesn't apply to her. This is what makes her powerful and capable of creating change, is that the law does not apply to her. And they feel this way all the way through. George Clooney, the wisest man ever to set foot in Hollywood, just a truly deep individual. When he's not putting nipples on his batsuit, George Clooney is angry. He's very angry at the amount of money that's being spent on politics, unless, of course, he's raising that money for Hillary Clinton. Again, you're above the law, and being above the law makes you powerful. We now live in the age of supermen. We live in the age of supermen and superwomen, ubermenschen, and this is just another part and parcel of that age.
You co-hosted on Friday night, a big fundraiser I know that you have planned for later tonight. Do you look at how much is being raised? And I think the co-host of the Friday night dinner, $353,000 a couple to be a co-chair. Do you look at it yourself and think that's an obscene amount of money?
Yes, I think it's an obscene amount of money. I think that, you know, we had some protesters last night when we pulled up in San Francisco. And they're right to protest. They're absolutely right. It is an obscene amount of money. The Sanders campaign, when they talk about it, is absolutely right. It's ridiculous that we should have this kind of money in politics. I agree.
But he's doing it, isn't he? Right, that's Trump. That's Trump. Right, it's all the same. It's all the same thing as Trump. Right, so it's terrible bribery when Ted Cruz is doing it. When he's not even doing it, it's terrible. But when I do it? That's just business, gang. That's just business. They're above the rules. The Uber mention, right? They're above all the rules. And what this, and then the way that they get away with this is that they say, okay, we're going to basically imply that Hillary's a victim. So again, dictators play victims always. Hugo Chavez always said, "I am the people." The minute he was attacked, how dare you victimize the people? Right? I am the people. If you're attacking me, you're attacking the people. MSNBC's Joy Reid is playing defense for Hillary. A bunch of Bernie Sanders supporters threw money at Hillary's motorcade as she came through Beverly Hills, and here's MSNBC's Joy Reid suggesting this makes Hillary a victim.
People throwing dollar bills as if in a strip club. This coming on the heels of a Bernie Sanders surrogate having to apologize for using the term Democratic whores at the Washington Square Park rally. That visual there of throwing dollar bills at a woman as she's going by in her motorcade. Yeah. Has the Democratic race gone over the edge?
It's really striking. And I don't know what it is exactly that has caused this. Maybe it's because we're here in New York. The media situation here is really intense. There's a sort of tabloid culture of it all. But I think it's also that Sanders' supporters are coming to realize that this process is going to come to an end.
Okay, so in any case, Joy Reid there suggesting that it's like throwing money at a stripper. First of all, no one has ever wanted Hillary to strip. Ever, 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 ever. They would pay her not to strip if that were the actual threat, right? The equivalent of Donald Trump threatening to burn down the RNC is Hillary Clinton threatening to strip. Joy Reid over at MSNBC suggesting this again. Hillary's the victim. It's not that she takes hundreds of thousands of dollars from Wall Street and then won't release her speeches. No, she's a victim. She's always a victim. So they're the same. Hillary and Trump, they're always the same. But again, both sides looking for somebody outside the system to be a system wrecker by not obeying any of the rules. The higher the level of criminality, the more you know that they are worthy of the presidency. They're worthy of power because they will operate outside the rules. They want a god, Right? One of the big questions in religion, is God subject to morality or is morality subject to God? Most religious people say morality is subject to God. God is above morality, right? We don't define God by what he does to us. We define morality by what he informs us to do. The left believes the same thing about its candidates, whether we're talking about Donald Trump or whether we're talking about Hillary Clinton. And there are people who are supposedly on the right who fall victim to this mentality because it is a universal human drive to find the powerful person to fix everything, the God king to fix everything. It's a universal human drive throughout human history, but it is a drive that is born of a leftist belief system and emotion that really is quite damaging. Okay, quick update from the John Kasich campaign, the quixotic John Kasich campaign that continues to exist for no reason. John Kasich has now announced a huge endorsement that will change everything. All the things will be changed by this endorsement. Guess who just endorsed John Kasich? Oh, God, no, not John Kasich. Yes, John Kasich. Here we go.
Well, he's the three-time governor of New York. I mean, that is just really, I mean, he's up there in the pantheon of the great leaders of the state of New York. And to me, it is a very consequential thing that he did. I feel very good about it, and I don't have any doubt that it's going to give us a little bit of momentum. And, you know, he's going to campaign with me all the way through through the election.
Okay,
and
so, then we'll so there's John Kasich. What changes everything is that George Pataki, whose actual 2016 campaign slogan, I believe, was, if everyone else dies in a fiery plane accident, George Pataki, 2016. He's now being trotted out by the Kasich campaign. Yeah, that's going to be a big win. John Kasich continuing to be a human and doing things that are human-like. Okay, time for some things I like and then some things that I hate. Okay, first things that I like, my wife and I went to see down at the Amundsen, Gentlemen's Guide to Love and Murder, which is this musical. It's based on an old British movie from 1949 with Alec Guinness, and it's very clever. It's not for the younger crowd. It's rated R for sure, but it's very clever. It's very funny. A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. Here's just a little bit of this is probably the best number in the show. This is from, I think this is from the Tony Awards, actually. So this is from the Broadway production of A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder.
Racist, Miss Dermond. Yes, Wadsworth, I told you. Be just a moment!
Now, Monty, dear, I think I am to go.
Oh!
I still want to marry you.
Even so.
I decided to marry you.
Just go.
I'm longing to marry you.
Hello.
Yes, I'm delighted to marry you, marry you, marry you. A shame you must go.
Happening here is that there's one girl who wants to marry him, and the other one he's got on a string, basically. She's married to, but it's a very clever, funny, very dark musical. He's basically a serial killer. Is what the story is. He's ninth in line to be the new Earl of Highhurst, and he tries to kill the other eight people who are in line in front of him so that he can become Earl of Highhurst. Very clever, very funny. Okay, so there is a thing that I like. Things that I hate. Okay, so first of all, just a quick note. Apparently, somebody, I can't imagine this is anybody other than a Trump supporter, but I got a phone call over the weekend, and somebody left a message for me, some dude left a message for me saying, I saw your profile on Tinder, and you look really hot. Okay, I'm going to go with a Trump supporter probably posted some sort of profile on Tinder using my home phone number. No evidence of that yet, because I don't know even how to search Tinder to find out if that's true, but I assure you that this is it was to quote Homer Simpson, it was what's the quote? It's like it's awful but flattering. So I guess I'm getting some unique phone calls from Trump supporters now, because nothing really says that your man is the man quite like going on a gay Tinder profile site and entering other people's information. This really shows that you're gutsy and wonderful, so well done there. And to all the nice gay gentlemen who are calling me, I'm sorry, I'm straight, I'm taken. You're lost, but I'm sure that you'll find love some other place. Okay, other things that I hate. So SNL, Saturday Night Live, they've decided that the key to leftism is now to bully the living crap out of religious people. So over in North Carolina, Georgia, in Mississippi, there have been a variety of laws that have now come out. And these laws basically say that if you're a religious person, or any person actually, you can reject service to somebody based on your religious affiliation. So if I'm an Orthodox Jew, which I am, and I don't feel like serving a gay wedding, I don't have to do that, right? This is what these laws say. Well, SNL thinks this is just terrible. SNL thinks this is just awful. So there's a movie called God Is Not Dead, and there's God Is Not Dead 2, which I guess just came out. Neither one of them is a very good movie. But SNL used this as a leaping-off point to make fun of Christians because this is what they do. By the way, you'll never see them do this with Muslims, right? It'll never be Allah is not dead. They will never, ever, ever do this. But with Christians, they can do it. So here is their fake trailer for God Is Not Dead. And this is apparently – this is how – understand, this is how people from New York and L.A. think of religious Americans. This is what they think of religious people. This is what they think we are. Okay.
Beth was a small-town baker without a care.
Hi there. I'd like to order a wedding cake.
Of course. Where's the lucky bride?
He's right here.
Until her faith was tested.
Now make the cake.
They wanted her to spit in the face of God.
I said make the cake.
I can't do it.
From the makers of God on the Run and Angel in Denim, the Kim Davis story.
What are you thinking? Gays are the most powerful force in America.
A story of liberal elites run wild.
You'll be hearing from our Jewish lawyer.
My name is Shmuel from the ACLU. You're in a lot of trouble, Beth.
What do you people want from me?
My clients just need you to say three simple words.
God is gay.
But he's not gay. God is as straight as they come.
Then I guess we'll be seeing you in court.
This is my fight song. Take back my life song.
In a time of persecution.
Court is now in session.
Gays are trying to force their agenda. They're even teaching it in school.
Only she had the courage to say.
They say we're bigots, but Christians are the most oppressed group in this country.
Maybe.
But I'm gonna prove once and for all that God is straight.
Okay.
If God is gay, then why aren't there any gay priests?
Miss Walsh, you are on thin ice. You know God is gay. Just admit it.
No.
She needed an ally.
Governor, we are the poorest state in the country, second in obesity, third in teen pregnancy. We have to do something.
Well, hold that thought. What's wrong, ma'am?
I want to deny basic goods and services to gay people.
Everybody out. This is the priority now.
Last chance, Miss Walsh.
Okay, so this is the obnoxious way the left thinks of religious people, right? We're all religious bigots. First of all, just to point out, at the very beginning, right, you have this gay couple walks in, they say, make us the cake. And this is supposed to be funny, right, is that they say, make us the cake. Like, who would possibly do this? You. You would do this. Okay, you lefties, you actually did this. You did this in Oregon. You went to court to make that lady right there, right? You made her do this to the tune of $175,000 in fines. So don't pretend that this is a joke. It's not a joke. You ruined some people's lives to do that. So you act like, oh, everybody's paranoid about this, because it happened. Because of you. So there's that. Then it turns into the only reason she doesn't want to do this is because she thinks that God is straight. And so they're trying to force people to say, no one cares what you think gay. Like, if you're gay and you think God is gay, okay, all right. Most religious people I know don't think of God as having a sexuality, right? Because there isn't a second God to have sex with, right? And it's not a material thing. So most religious people I know are not pagans like the ancient Greeks. We didn't think there are lots of gods running around screwing each other. This is not our thing. Right, but the idea is that we're so simplistic and we're so stupid that we think that God only approves of heterosexual sex. Okay, we only think God approves of heterosexual sex because in our Bible, that's what it says. That doesn't mean that you can't do what you want. If you want to sin, that's your business. It's a free country. You can sin. But that doesn't mean you get to force us to sin. Okay, the idea that Christians have been intolerant, this is part of the thing that's so annoying. Clavin talks about this regularly. The idea that Christians are so deeply, horribly intolerant to gay people. Who do you think created this country? Who do you think created this Western civilization? The only civilization of the last several thousand years where homosexuals can live openly? Who do you think did that? Was that a bunch of secularists? It was actually a bunch of Christians, it turns out. And that Christian civilization brought forth the idea of the Enlightenment and rationality. And it also brought forth the idea of individual human freedom to sin without government compulsion, so long as you're not hurting third parties. That is an outgrowth of an actual civilization that is rooted in Judeo-Christian religion. You can't just separate them. So, you know, this kind of stuff is highly irritating to me, because for people who don't follow this stuff, it does look ridiculous. And the goal is to make it look like, oh, these stupid hicks down south, these idiot hicks who don't care about teenage pregnancy. First of all, you want to talk about people who don't care about teenage pregnancy, start with SNL, where they're fine with single mothers. Those are heroes. Single mothers are heroes. And anybody who objects to single motherhood and says it causes crime, those people are bigots. And the whole thing is really disreputable. But that's the goal. When you want to talk about intolerance, that's intolerant. That's intolerant. Because imagine for a second that, first of all, I object personally to the use of the guy in the yarmulke as though he's going to be the representative of the ACLU. Okay? It would be a Jew without a yarmulke who represents the ACLU. But beyond that, imagine they made this about Muslims. You think they would ever do that? The idiot Muslim who doesn't want to cater the gay wedding? The idiot Muslim who doesn't want to be involved in teenage promiscuity? You think they'd ever do that? Ever? Of course not, because they recognize that that's intolerant, that people have different standards, right? Except if you're Christian. Then the whole premise of this is just make the cake, right? That's the whole premise of this is just make the cake. If she just made the cake, it would have been okay, even though the reality is that there is bullying going on, and it is bullying of religious people. Just walk down the street, gang. You don't want to get the cake here, go get the cake somewhere else. The person doesn't want to serve you, guess what? You can order a cake online. There's plenty of options. This is America. Okay, final thing that I don't like for today. So apparently, there's a new report looking at abortion in the West, and what it finds is, shocker, shocker, massive gender-based abortion in the West. Massive gender-based abortion in the West. So according to this study, it's reported by the Boston Pilot, apparently it's not just in China where there is sex-selective abortion for males. Apparently, it's happening all across the world, particularly with immigrants, that if there is abortion, it is targeting all sorts of, it's targeting females, that it's killing off women. Well, this is the amazing thing about feminists. They're so happy to praise abortion that they forget that the entire next generation that's going to be aborted, or at least a lot of them across planet Earth, are going to be women. They're going to be females. Because it turns out that in the third world societies where the left thinks abortion is most necessary, in those societies, boys are valued more than girls because boys can fight and boys can work the land. Right? That's the reality. So all these lefties who love abortion and want to bring abortion to Africa and Asia, just recognize that women, you know, you and your feminist friends, women are going to be the ones who suffer the consequence. There will be no next generation of women, right? Those women will all be killed off in the womb, or a lot of them will be anyway. That's what's happening in China. Okay, so tomorrow is going to be the New York primary day. We do the show before the primary results are out. We should just assume that Trump is going to be the big winner in New York, and the narrative will shift once again to Ubermensch Trump on the rise, Drumpf on the rise again, and it'll all be very exciting. We'll talk about that tomorrow, and we'll be back with more depressing news. And in the meantime, why don't you listen to Klavan's show? He might make you feel better. And if we're both depressed, I don't know what you're going to do with your life today. I mean, just try to stay away from the cyanide. It'll be okay. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.